B-Pod Studios.
97.5, The Fanatic.
I love our next guest. He's terrific. Gives us great insight into the birds. Does a great job covering him for the Inquirer, Inquirer.com. Check him out. Jeff McClain on the Comcast Business Hotline. Jeffrey?
What's up? You got me?
Oh, I got you now, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, that's all right. All right. I need this answered. Okay?
Yeah.
Follow my logic here. The Ravens, strength of the Ravens defense, because they have two great corners. Would you say their tandem would be top five in the league?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're at the goal line. You got two great corners in Humphrey and Peters. They're going to play a bare front, right? So you kind of know what they're going to do. You would say your worst kind of position group, you know your limitations. Your offensive line is beat up, right? Beat up.
Yep.
You got no Miles Sanders. Why would you run a read option with Wentz and Boston Scott knowing that it's a horrible matchup for you? Like, why would that come into your mind? I'm just a fake football guy, right? I'm just some idiot on the radio, and I'm looking at the matchup, and I can go, yeah, well, the one play I'm not running is I'm not running the ball.
No, I mean, you want to give yourself some options there. Boston Scott has not really shown much on the ground either, so you have to factor that into the equation.
By the way, you're at the goal line.
Right. He's not really technically an in-between-the-tackles type runner. So, no, it was as I rode off the game, I mean, that was, you know, again, Doug deserves credit for getting that team to the whisker of winning with almost no one left on the offense. But he didn't finish. And, you know, you knew down 30-14 with 7.5 to go that you were going to, if you're going to win that game or if you're going to come back and tie it, you needed two touchdowns and two-point conversions. So let's get the two-point conversion plays already. And Doug's excuse the following day was that one of them was that they had exhausted all of their short yardage plays or, you know, red zone plays in terms of, that proximity to the goal line. I mean, I don't know if that's a good enough excuse. I mean, you know, or use it again.
This is what I'm really worried about. All right. So, okay, you know, you go for it all the time. You go for two. It's a thing now. Like, just go for two every time. Don't even front. Like, if you're going to go for two when you're down 17-0 that early in the game in the third quarter, then you're just going to go for two all the time. Like, we've seen that, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's your prerogative. All right. All right. Well, then you should have a plethora of 2-point conversion plays, seeing how you go for it all the time, right? Would that be logical?
Yeah, clearly.
Also, knowing that what the Ravens do, the strength of their defense, knowing where you are on the field, knowing what you got to work with on your team, why would the thought ever come to run a read option with those two? See, it's not the play call. It's the thought process behind the play call that scares me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, and that's fair. My issue was maybe a little more that they were obviously scrambling for a play, and that's why it took a while to get the play into the huddle. It's why that Carson must have been getting it still from Doug. Again, the play clock is different for a 2-point conversion than it is. It's shorter than it would be for a normal play. And I was watching the whole thing, and I'm like, they're in the huddle very long. This is even before they start the clock for the 20-second countdown. Then Carson went back in, and it was like a 10 seconds he's in there giving a long, you know, giving the play. It must have been saying something more. My guess is maybe they changed it while he was in there. I don't know. But it was way too long to be giving a play. And I know even West Coast terminology is longer than maybe some other terminology for certain other offenses. But it was weird. So all of a sudden I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, this is not going to get off in time. They get it off in time. And I think that also kind of affected the execution to some degree.
Right. So they rushed through it. Yeah.
So it was a mess from the get go. And this is to tie the game. This is the game right here on the line, which is why I thought, again, second week in a row, call a timeout. You got one left. Burn it. This is the game. Just like that play, you know, third and six, and you don't stop them there, you don't have a chance to score.
The Claypool
game,
thing. Yeah.
That was the game. So it's just they weren't thinking on their feet again.
Well, again, and thank you, all right? And this leads me to, I start to think about things, about times when, and you, listen, this is your life, so you'll know better than I will. I'm trying to think about moments where they've been thrust, and Doug's been thrust to think quickly on his feet. And you know what's interesting? I go back to the Super Bowl, right? And the whole Philly thing, we joke about it all the time. It became in Philly lore, the whole thing. But Doug clearly wasn't calling that play. Let's go back. Jeff, let's refresh your memory. How about this?
No, Nick walks up, Philly.
Just to hear it.
You want Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it.
2.1 seconds to pause, by the way.
Yeah.
Seriously, he's going through. You can see it. Like, he knows he wants to go for it, which is great, but he's not thinking quickly enough to give the play call. So Foles has to call the play.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that, you know, that has not been one of Doug's strengths. I mean, it wasn't. You know, I thought it was an issue when they hired him, and you know, he'd been given play calling responsibilities in Kansas City for the second half of games, and they had that playoff loss to the Patriots, and geez, the clock management in that game was horrendous. And you know, I asked him the question at the press conference, and you know, Jim Schwartz kind of ridiculed it a little bit, but boy, that's a tough question to ask a new head coach, but I thought it was a fair one. Because I wanted to know how Doug would react under those circumstances if he was to be the play caller in Philadelphia. I don't think it's been as bad as maybe you would have thought based off that performance in the Kansas City game. But it's not clearly not one of Doug's strengths, thinking on his feet.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
See, my conclusion is this. The play calling duties are just too much for him. He's not that good at it. And he's got to manage the game. So he's got to manage the game and call plays. And I know he loves it. He told you he loved it. And he's got no, he's not going to give him up. But I think it's best for the team if he does. And I got news for you. I remember when Andy gave up his play call for a while.
Yeah, it helped. It's fair. It's fair. I mean, they won a Super Bowl with Doug calling plays, so it's tough to overlook that. And who's going to be going to go to Marty, I guess, in this, or Rich Gangarella or Press Taylor?
Well, that's the problem. Here's the problem is they don't have a pronounced offensive coordinator, which is something I'm not saying that this has to happen tomorrow. But it has to be in addition to their coaching staff. They have to figure out, they need a true offensive coordinator to lean on. But I don't think he'll ever do it. Reich, we could say all you want about the Super Bowl, but Frank Reich had a big role in that thing. And the whole thing.
It's not going to happen this year. Maybe it's something that they look into this year, depending upon how the rest of the season goes, something in the offseason they look into. I do agree Frank Reich was a very soothing voice in Doug's ear during game days. I mean, he was responsible. He was the guy that helped him in 2 minutes. And and that's, you know, Doug didn't really have any slip ups in that regard in the 2 years that Frank was there. So, I think they got along. They got along well and worked together well, and there's no disputing that. And, you know, Doug hasn't quite been the same, I think, in terms of his play calling without Frank in his ear.
Well, anyway, I just was so confused at the thought process behind the 2-point conversion as to why he would even think it's a good idea. But,
I think they panicked, and that was what they, you know, yeah. Carson said something about having a look that they thought, you played into that, their advantage there. The execution wasn't great either. Rich Rogers missed his block.
Yeah, I mean, but I know I've heard this revisionist that if Rich Rod makes the block, he's going to walk into the end zone. I don't believe.
No, there was two guys.
Yeah, I think that's nonsense.
But, I mean, obviously you're reading the unblocked guy, but
right,
it wasn't a good play.
So
Doug admitted as much.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I don't want to make a federal case, but it's important when it comes to thinking on your feet quickly when you're the play caller and the game manager as a head coach. And that's the only thing I'm pointing at.
I agree. I mean, it's a shame because they had gotten themselves back into it, and they had schemed a lot of guys open up until that point. They schemed a lot of guys open that game early on. Obviously, John Hightower dropping the pass. Miles dropping. These were guys that were wide open.
Yes.
They were schemed open.
Yes.
Doug's game plan was very good. Execution was an issue. And obviously with the injuries, Carson was just running around for his life. The game plan was better than was one of the better ones he's had this season, I thought.
I agree. I agree with you.
Yep.
All right. You got shut down pretty emphatically on the medical staff question. What's your theory? Because I know you have a working theory.
Well, I wrote today about the issue. It's something I've written about a lot the last 3 seasons.
And please go to that. And I did that for a reason, so people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know everything. We don't get to talk to anybody in the medical staff. Howie's in charge of these decisions. He's the one behind all of them. You know, he's the one who decided that the doctors that had been there for 20 years, that had athletic trainer that had been there for 20 years, that the staff wasn't good enough after the Super Bowl or whatever. He wanted to change directions and maybe put his own stamp on the medical staff. I don't know. A lot of turnover. It's tough to have. I mean, sometimes you got to make those moves. I get that. I'm sure these guys are well respected. I don't think it's as much the doctors or Arsh's. Is Donato's the in charge of? He's like the chief medical officer, or whatever it is. He's kind of in charge of everything. Not much experience. He had worked under those guys, Peter DeLuca and Gary Dorsheimer before, so he had worked a little bit in the NFL, but wasn't like he was the guy in charge. So you're putting an inexperienced guy in there, and then you initially had an inexperienced trainer, a guy who'd been an assistant under somebody, Jerome Reed. You've made a lot of changes here, and then all of a sudden this past off season. You know, to their credit, they decided that we had to make a change, and they brought in a guy, Tom Hunkele, who worked under previously with the Eagles under Rick Burkholder, and they brought in a new strength guy, Ten Rath, although you got to wonder why. I mean, for Tom, it was a promotion. For Ted, it was kind of a lateral move. You have to wonder why the Rams are willing to let him go. So you got all this turnover and change, and that affects how things are done, and you're going to have some bumps in the road. I get that, but this is now the third year running that they've been among the most injured teams in the league. And look, a lot of it, or Doug has said yesterday when asked about it by someone else, that this is a part of football. These are football injuries, but I mean, soft tissue injuries aren't really technically football injuries. They're injuries that happen if you're not stretched out properly, or if you're not conditioned, or if you're not, you know, they're not entirely football injuries. And then the way that you have recovery and timetable for recovery, that's an issue as well. And we've had these dubious timetables, and we've had questions about, well, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, yeah, he'll be ready within 6 weeks. Well, he's still not ready. You wasted a roster spot on him. DeSean Jackson's day-to-day. Well, no, he's not day-to-day. He's week-to-week. He's now missed 3 games. Jason Peters, what's going on there? There's a lot to digest. There's a lot to question, and I don't have all the answers. It's tough to get the answers. Howie doesn't talk during the season as well. But he's the guy behind all of it. And at this point, it's not a coincidence that the Eagles have been among the most injured teams in 3 years. Trust me, in that building, they're concerned about it every single day, and they don't know what's going on, and it's concerning, I think. And look, it's one of the main reasons why they're 1-4-1.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you look at this division, now let's focus, and we're talking to Jeff McClain on the Comcast Business Hotline. You saw how bad the Cowboys are. They have their own issues on their offensive line when it comes to injuries.
Uh-huh.
Dalton is a disaster behind that kind of line. You need to protect him if you have any hopes to move offensively. Defensively, they're really bad. So the Eagles at 1-4-1 are really set up to win the division with the next three games being Giants, Dallas, and Giants. What do you think about Thursday?
They should win. I mean, the Giants' offense is pretty bad. They don't have much. Daniel Jones is still a young quarterback. He's still a guy that can be rattled. You don't have your running back anymore. The offensive line is still an issue there. This is a two games you win. Their defense is not bad. I give them that. But you're home Thursday night, short week. You're injured, obviously, so you have to factor that into it well. But if you can't win this game, then I mean, I guess you're still technically in it. But the Cowboys have the most talented roster, but their coaching staff's a disaster, a hot mess, and they also have obviously the injuries at quarterback and on the offensive line. The Eagles should win this division, but and they may win it at 6-9-1. Is that, what you want moving forward? Is that are the Eagles going to puff out their chests and say that, look, we did this? I mean, look, they have no other choice but to try and win it. I get all that. The question is whether it, and I can't imagine it will, but, whether it allows them to not see all the flaws that there are in this roster.
Hmm.
And not just on the roster, just kind of in
general,
in the organization.
Who is expected back and who's definitely out in your mind?
I think all the guys who got hurt on Sunday are probably out, which would take Zach Ertz, Miles Sanders, Malik Jackson, Kevon Wallace, and there's one other guy that got hurt. Oh, Jack Driscoll. That would take them out of the lineup. Maybe Deshaun Jackson's back. Who knows? Lane, I don't think, you'd want to turn around that quickly. Yeah. I know he didn't play, but
you need him against Dallas for sure, yeah.
Let him get through Thursday. You want to get to Dallas. You're banged up. I mean, Dallas Goedert is still out. Jason Peters is still out. Avante Maddox will probably still be out.
So no Goddard?
No.
Wow.
Jalen Reagor obviously still out. I don't know what's going on with Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, again, like I was told you in the offseason, I was told by several people that he probably would never play again for the Eagles. I don't know. Maybe we're seeing that.
Yeah, but here's the problem I have with that is that they mismanaged the roster. Why wouldn't you put Alshon on pop, which is six games anyway?
I guess they were trying to trade him, but they've been trying to trade him since last year. No one's taken that anvil of a contract. I don't get it.
And you had to cut a draft pick because
it was a horrible. That was terrible. I mean, that's just. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he gives you something. I don't know. I wouldn't want him to take the snaps away from Greg Ward or Travis Fulgham.
Well, I know it's Fulgham's spot. I mean, I don't want to get. I love Fulgham. I mean,
Fulgham looks like Alshon did 5 years ago. That type of guy.
It's you got great hands and
in the end zone. Yeah, phenomenal.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Brother, as always, great conversation. I enjoy it. You give me more than just one word answers, so I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. Jeff McClain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.